Worthy is the Lamb whose death makes you his own, dear brothers and sisters loved by him. Did you feel helpless on Friday? I did. And it wasn't only because my power was out. It wasn't only because I couldn't stop winds that were howling that had kept me up all through the night on Thursday. My prayer life was very fervent on Thursday, about 3 a.m. But maybe for a much more trivial reason, I'll share it with you. I felt helpless. Because as I looked out my window, I saw so much of my hard fall labors blowing literally in the wind. Some of you know this because I've confessed it to you before, probably from this very pulpit. My difficulty in the ongoing, never-ending battle with leaves. I call it the price of living in our Virginia beauty, surrounded by so many trees. It's wonderful in fall when they're turning color and in spring when they're coming back, but I don't like it when they fall. And they never seem to really ever be raked up and gone. And it seems it never ends. And finally, by about mid-January, I thought I had declared it is finished. Only on Friday to be looking out my window and seeing cyclonic displays of these very leaves blowing all over, and not only my leaves that I'd raked, leaves from all of Greater Prince William County. And in the way that God had designed things in his perfect wisdom, the wind cycles were blowing them all into my yard. And so they're all there. And so once again, there are the leaves, and I felt helpless, and I thought, this will never end. But isn't that kind of the course and the pace of life at times? This will never end. Sometimes it's big, difficult problems in life. Sometimes it's minor annoyances such as leaves. Sometimes it's some of the things I mentioned in the children's message today. I was reminded of one more thing that I think will never end this morning. This one is just for us guys, but maybe you can share the pain with me. Shaving. It just never ends. Oh, I guess women do that. We won't go into all of this now, but shaving never ends too, will it? It just never ends. Day by day. Okay. But to help cure me of my whining about seemingly day-by-day projects that will never end, from leaves to shaving, I'm so happy that we have these words from Hebrews today, because they highlight a task that seemed like it would never end for God's people in the Old Testament times. It was the task of sacrificing animals. And I know when I say these words, I know our young friends here, their eyes are already getting big. And they're going, oh, why would you want to do that? Well, God told them to do that. Part of their worship was sacrificing animals. And it went on day after day after day. I am so thankful for all the time that I saved going through the seminary, never having to take sacrificing animals 101 or 201 or 301, because the priests 2,000 or so years ago, they had a big job on their hands, literally. In fact, their hands would have been dripping with blood. I am not going to get into all kinds of gross details here, hopefully. But here's just a little snapshot on it. Some have calculated that there were about 1,200 public sacrifices in Israel every single year. Every day, two lambs were sacrificed, one in the morning and one in the evening. Every Sabbath day, on worship day, that number was doubled to four lambs. The first day of every month was marked by the sacrifice of two bulls, a ram, seven male lambs, and a male goat. And then in addition to all of these things, on festival days, special offerings were brought. For example, on the Passover, 11 more animals were slaughtered and sacrificed. And it is no exaggeration to say that rivers of blood flowed from the altar of burnt offering, and that mountains of animal carcasses filled the courtyard that the altar stood, first in front of the tabernacle and later the temple. My goodness. Wow. What a sight What a project going on and on. And it wasn't only work for the priests. When you did certain sins, you had to bring certain sacrifices to. Some of them were animals, some of them might have just been grain or other offerings. But when you start to read through the Old Testament laws, it becomes pretty apparent that almost every day you could potentially be in danger of having to bring a sacrifice because you did something or you touched something or you were near something that made you unclean. Day by day by day, this would go on. Why did God do that? Why did he have them do that? Well, God's a master teacher. And he was teaching them a lesson. Day by day, you sin, and there needs to be a payment for that. And blood is going to need to flow to pay for sins. And no matter how hard you try, your own sacrificing day by day isn't really going to achieve it. I know I'm skipping to the end of our text a little bit, but it's described this way in verse 11 of Hebrews 10. Day after day, every priest stands and performs his religious duties again and again. He offers the same sacrifices which can never take away sins. Now, they were supposed to do those sacrifices, but finally, they couldn't really take away sins. They were a preview of the one who would sacrifice for his sins. And the students would have gotten the lesson in vivid detail, day after day, month after month, year after year of doing this thing that would seemingly never end. Now, as we hear these words, with blue catechism in hand, or new revised navy blue catechism in hand, Bible in the other, as good Lutherans, we might want to just jump in and say, yes, ha, we know that. We know that no sacrificing can take away sins. We know that we are not saved by works, by what we do. We know we're saved only by the sacrifice of Jesus. He did it all. Yay, we know that already. Are we going to go to the Apostles' Creed now or not? Well, we might know that with our minds. But here's the hardest thing for us to ever really believe and grasp with our hearts. That it is really finished. That it is really done. That there's absolutely nothing left for you to do or that you ever even could do for you to be right with God. In fact, just look at your life. Do you ever have a gnawing, nagging feeling that maybe it isn't done? Or maybe it was done, but then what you did, well, you kind of messed it up. I mean, God had forgiven you, but after what you did, maybe he's going to pull that back. Or that it was all done to bring you into faith, but now that you're in faith, you better buck up and live right and do good. You better be systematically cutting through those sins and nasty stuff that keeps cropping up in your heart and mind, because God's not going to want any of that. So now you better get to work. And maybe if you try hard enough and get your act together good enough, then maybe one day, someday soon, hopefully, you can finally feel a little bit better about yourself. But until then, I wouldn't be too certain if I were you. Or are you the only one? Am I the only one who has these thoughts? No. See, day by day, you and I might not be heaping up animal carcasses to try to pay for what we've done. But day by day, maybe we have more subtle thoughts that creep in our mind. If only I can, and they start pretty young. If only I can graduate from fifth grade math. Then I can feel good. Then mom and dad will love me and I'll be all right. If only I can make the team. If only I can become all conference. If only I can make the musical. If only I can get on the honor roll. Then I can start to feel okay about myself. If only I can get her to say yes when I ask her to prom. Well, it comes in all kinds of subtle ways. But then we get on. If only I can graduate from college, if only I can get that job that I'm looking for, that, then I can feel okay. If only I can pay off my student debts. If only I can advance in my job. If only I can start to get some recognition for what I am doing in my job. If only I can get married. If only I can have kids. If only I can make sure my kids don't mess up too much and aren't too embarrassing, and especially when the grandparents come. Then I can feel okay. If only we can fix this marriage, then I can feel okay. If only I can get over this health thing. If only I have enough for retirement, then I can feel okay. If only I can get my mom to respect me and say how good I'm doing, no matter what age I am. If only I can finally kind of get a hold on that sin and temptation that keeps cropping up. I think there's 5 or 7 steps. If I follow them correctly, maybe I can get that sin out of my life and I can feel good about it. If only I can get that back room of the home organized. If only I can. It just goes on forever, doesn't it? And am I the only one who's had this experience? When you get one of those things kind of where you think is under control, there's just another thing popping up, screaming in your face that says, do, do, do. And day by day, there's a list of not done that swirls through your mind. Day by day, you hear the accusation of the law, what God would have you do or not do, say, you're not doing it. You're not doing enough. You're not doing well enough. And sometimes we even try to comfort ourselves with well-intentioned but awful-sounding statements like these. Well, did you try your best? Did you do your best? I don't know. How would you ever know if you've done your best? Are you being faithful? I don't know. Maybe I am, maybe I'm not. We look here to try to find what can only be given there. So here's the good news I need to hear, and maybe you too, from Hebrews chapter 10. No matter what your daily sacrificial system is to try to make yourself feel better about yourself or how God feels about you, this is God's good news to you today. Verse 5 of Hebrews 10. Therefore, when Christ came into the world, he said, sacrifice an offering you did not desire, but a body you prepared for me. With burnt offerings and sin offerings you were not pleased. Then I said, here I am. It is written about me in the scroll. I have come to do your will, my God. First he said, sacrifices and offerings, burnt offerings and sin offerings you did not desire, nor were you pleased with them, though they were offered in accordance with the law. Then he said, here I am. I have come to do your will. He set aside the first to establish the second. And by that will, we have been made holy through the sacrifice of the body of Jesus Christ once for all. I'm going to pause there. I got your attention there in verse 5. Sacrifice an offering you did not desire. Well, didn't God come up with that whole system? Well, yes, he did. Well, what's being said here? He wanted them to be doing those daily sacrifices, but not as a way for them to punch their little card into heaven. That could never happen. Instead, that was to get them to realize they needed something else, a better sacrifice to bring them there and to sacrifice for them. So Jesus said, here I am. God prepared a body for him. He, true God, Jesus, took on true human flesh. And in that human body, for 33 years, he perfectly did everything. Every day he went to sleep with everything done on the checklist. With nothing to regret. With nothing to keep him up in the middle of the night like you and I. Not howling winds, but howling guilt, remembering what we did yesterday or the years before. Jesus had none of that. He was perfect. He did it for you, and he did it for me. And in that body, he went near the temple, probably within a quarter mile of the temple where the lambs were being sacrificed. It was just outside the city gates, but on another altar he was sacrificed. An altar put up not by Jews, but by Romans. It was called the cross. And there on that cross, he didn't die for anything he had done in his 33 years, but he died for every sin in all the years of the world. all the years of your life. All the moments and days and years of your life of sinning were nailed on that cross completely, totally. Every sin you ever committed or will commit, He died for at that moment, on that day. And then He proclaimed those beautiful words. There's a Great Friday coming up later that we're going to talk about these more, but He said these great words, "It is finished, completed, nothing left to do." So that by one sacrifice forever, you have been made perfect, holy. That's what it says in verse 10. You are holy in God's sight. You're not kind of good, but a diamond in the rough. You're not pretty good, but a project that God's working on. No, you are complete. You are holy. There is nothing left for you to do. There's nothing left for Jesus to do. Verse 12, but when this priest had offered for all time one sacrifice for sins, he sat down at the right hand of God. These words were mind-blowing for the Israelites and for the clergy too. You mean now we're not going to have to sacrifice animals every day? No, that's done. It made things a lot easier for our interior decorating committee here at church. We didn't have to have a basin to gather blood here. Thank you for that. But better than that, they're mind-blowing for you and me. Because when that little voice of the law creeps into our hearts and minds and says, "Come on, you need to do more," we say, "No, it is done. It is finished. By one sacrifice, I am made holy. I am made perfect forever." Oh, but we can't really preach and teach that, can we? Can we really believe that? Because if we really believe that it's all finished, are we just going to get lazy and play around with sin? Don't we kind of need to keep people in the dark a little bit uncertain, so we kind of keep them from really going off into bad directions? No! In fact, here's the irony of it all. The more you realize it is all done, that there's nothing left for you to do, the more your heart will be in power to enjoy freedom and peace, and the more you will want to walk in the ways of God and follow His law and follow His words, because you're not doing it to earn favor with Him. You're doing it because He has favor and peace upon you. In fact, the more you look to yourself and your little seven-step ways of trying to get yourself to feel better about yourself and feel better about how God feels about you, you'll start to look inward, narcissistic and self-centered, and you'll be full of despair the less you look at yourself. The more you look at the cross, where He proclaimed, "It is finished," then your heart and mind can be filled with freedom and joy. And you can say, "Yes, yes, Lord, this day let me follow You. Let me hear Your voice. Let me walk with You, because I am one with You. You were the sacrifice for me." Yes, and then at the end of the day, when all of that guilt comes pouring back again, you can say, "It is finished. You cannot accuse me, law. You cannot accuse me, devil. You cannot accuse me, conscience. You're good at it. He's better. It is finished. I'm holy. I'm cleansed. I'm perfect." And then in this world, full of all kinds of daily reminders that nothing is quite right, from leaves blowing around to power going out, to sicknesses, to death, you can be reminded that no matter what happens to you here, it is finished. Heaven is yours. Jesus loves you. You are holy. You are perfect. You are cleansed. You are not helpless. You have been helped. You have been made holy by your high priest. It is finished. Rejoice.